Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Annabelle. In 2002, Annabelle was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer at the age of 31. After her treatment and recovery, she wanted to get her dating life back on track. We'll be speaking about how her diagnosis affected her romantic life and how she managed to adapt. Annabelle, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on, Em.
To start off with, could you tell me a little bit about your diagnosis? What initially prompted you to get your symptoms checked out?
So I was 31. I'd never really had any health problems. I got home from like a Saturday night party. I was a young single woman, gone to that party hoping to like maybe meet a nice guy there. And I get home and I took my top off, and just by complete chance, my hand like brushed against what was a lump. And as I was taking this top off, and in that moment, I completely freaked out. Even though I had no reason to, I thought, oh my God, what on earth is that? So that was the sort of very start of my story.
So you were really young then. Had you had any history of breast cancer in your family?
No. So at the time, there was absolutely no history. One did later emerge, but many, many years later. And I remember even my mum saying to me, oh, well, you know, 9 out of 10 breast lumps are benign, especially at your age. And it's not as if we have any history of that in our family. So even though I completely freaked out, it was almost like in the following weeks, as I told her and I, you know, went to the GP, everyone kind of reassured me and was like, well, it's really not like to be cancer. It doesn't even feel like cancer. So my initial panic was kind of massively calmed by everyone around me.
Yeah, which is completely understandable. We often think of breast cancer as being something that affects women sort of postmenopausal. We don't often see it affecting younger women. So you would expect to get that kind of reaction from doctors, from those around you. So that makes a lot of sense. And then when you actually had your diagnosis then, what was your course of treatment?
So I was told that I definitely needed 6 cycles of a chemotherapy called FEC, which was what they used back then. I know it's changed a little bit. I think you get additional chemo now, and also needed 6 weeks of radiotherapy. So the lump was removed. And at the time I was told I didn't need a mastectomy. I had one many years later because I did have a family history, but that's kind of a very separate part of the story, and that I needed chemo and I needed radio.
And how was your life interrupted by all that?
It was such a massive shock, because when that night I found the lump, I was, you know, a 31-year-old woman with a very busy work life. I was an architect, which is, you know, quite a full-on career. And I had a good job in a London practice and was, you know, often working 60 hours a week. Wow. And when I wasn't working, you know, I was at the gym or catching the odd yoga class or going out with my friends and, you know, going to a party on a Saturday night with friends, hoping that this time there'd be a nice guy there. So that was very much the landscape of my life. And really my biggest problem back then was that I didn't have a boyfriend. And then in that moment, you're told you have cancer, like everything just kind of falls away. You feel, well, you feel like you've fallen off the edge of a cliff into this completely unknown sea, I suppose. So it was such a dramatic change. And I remember the oncologist I spoke to, I met one oncologist first who I really didn't like, so I didn't have treatment with him in the end. But he was like, oh, you could have chemo on Friday, spend the weekend recovering and go back to work on Monday. And I just thought about my job and it was so busy. I thought, no, I just can't do that. So I decided to take time off work while I was having chemo. So it was just a really strange world I ended up in, you know, going to the oncology unit all the time. And most people there were older than me. And all my friends, meanwhile, were getting on with their work, were getting on with their, you know, planning their weddings. Some of them were having first babies. So I just lived in this very different world for a while.
That must have been really difficult for you as well, just kind of having that feeling of being on hold And it sounds like that you went from having this very intense life of just 60-hour weeks and you know, a whole schedule outside of that as well, to just everything slowing down. Did that, you know, how did that impact you in the long run? Is that something that you were able to sort of, did you want to go back to how things were before after that, or did you have to adapt to a kind of new normal?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time when I was in it, it was a really weird mix of very challenging, because cancer, as everyone knows, is terrifying. Mm. Very lonely, even though I was very supported by the friends I told, because your life is so other to theirs. You know, everyone else, as I say, is rushing around with all these other priorities, and you don't know anyone else with cancer. And it was also oddly liberating because, you know, I remember spending a lot of time that summer, like lying in the park, like reading books, things that I never did, like very rarely did. So there was this sort of odd sense of liberation. And I did decide after treatment was over that I didn't want to go back to that full on a life, that full on a work life in particular. So I made choices like not to go back to the office, even though my boss was very kind and offered me my job back. I chose to become a freelance architect and work from home and sort of sculpt my life a bit more according to what I needed.
That's really good. And it is good that you were able to kind of take that learning from that. And how did that translate into your dating life then? You're saying beforehand it was kind of the biggest problem in your life was that you didn't have a boyfriend. And then how did finding your partner, because spoiler, you are married now. So in the meantime, you have obviously met your husband. And how was that after breast cancer? I mean, it must have been very different dating before and after. What differences did you notice?
I mean, I think the biggest feeling, and that was especially prevalent near the start of the whole cancer journey, was that I was damaged goods. Because, you know, when someone tells you you've got cancer and you're that young, you feel like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Cancer? Like, no one else has cancer that's my age that I know. And then, you know, you have this like 10 centimeter scar across your breast, which initially is, you know, quite red and raw. And of course, with time has faded. And then perhaps the worst of it is, in terms of kind of how you feel physically, is you lose your hair. Well, I lost my hair, as many women do. And even though, you know, I wore a wig and the wig looked great, and a lot of people actually had no idea I was wearing a wig, inside I felt very damaged by the whole thing. And I just kind of thought, well, who would want to like take somebody on with cancer? And during chemo, I really wasn't looking for a boyfriend at all, but I did end up going like to one party that whole summer of I was having chemo. And just bizarrely, I got asked out by this really gorgeous guy. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go out with him. So we went out for a few drinks a few times, and I ended up having to tell him about the cancer because it turned out he knew my boss and he'd like kind of would have found out anyway. So I was just open with him. I thought, well, I have to tell him. And then he disappeared. And, you know, we weren't even going out and he might have disappeared anyway. So I will never know if it was because I told him I had cancer. But that kind of left its mark on me, with that feeling of like, oh, well, yeah, he didn't want me when he found out I was going through cancer. So I think that was sort of scarred me in a way. And I was quite cautious thereafter when I did start dating again. And I actually thought, well, I'm only going to tell somebody if they ask or if it's really serious between us. And in the initial years after my diagnosis, I just didn't meet anyone that felt that serious. And actually, weirdly, almost no one asked either. Mm. But then when I met my now husband, you know, things were quite serious quite quickly. And I just thought, I have to tell him because it is a part of my story, even though, you know, I was several years past diagnosis and fairly confident that my cancer was unlikely to come back. I need to tell him. And he was incredibly supportive. And a few weeks after I told him, I actually had a cancer scare. I didn't have cancer in the end, but I went for an annual ultrasound and they found a lump and they needed to do a needle biopsy. And they were like, it's probably not cancer, but we're really not sure. There's like a 3 out of 10 chance it could be, which is, you know, reasonably high. Yeah. And he was really sweet. I remember telling him and he just said, look, whatever happens, I'm sticking around. I'm falling in love with you.
Mm. Oh, that's really touching. that's very touching to hear, especially after that first bad experience with that person who just disappeared, who, like you say, that could have had nothing to do with it, but your husband was really supportive, and obviously that's excellent that you had that support that second time round when you did have that scare. But as you alluded to earlier, you then did find out that there was something more in your family and that you might have had a higher risk of breast cancer. Do you mind talking a bit more about that?
No, of course. So several years after my diagnosis, I think I'd been about 7 years clear by then of the triple negative breast cancer I had. A cousin, followed quite quickly by another first cousin, both of whom were between 40 and 45, I can't remember the exact ages, were diagnosed with breast cancer. And I think my first cousin who got diagnosed was a doctor. I didn't really know her because she lived on the other side of the world in Brazil. So she got herself checked out and tested. And I think nowadays they're much more on it if you have triple negative breast cancer, I think, and you're young. I think they test you as a matter of course. So she got herself tested and found out that she had the BRCA gene.
This is a post-recording note. Annabelle is referring to BRCA gene mutations that increase breast cancer risk. You can find more information about this on the Breast Cancer Now website.
And I then realised that, gosh, I am really likely to have the BRCA gene. And I found that quite hard because I felt like, oh my gosh, I've kind of done my time with cancer. You know, it's in the background now. I'm getting on with my life. I've got my new boyfriend, now husband. And I found that quite challenging, to be honest.
And when you found that out then, was there any course of action that you had to take from that point?
Yeah, so I was told either to have annual MRI scans or to have a preventative or risk reducing, as it's called, double mastectomy. And because I was sort of, I think, found that quite challenging, the thought of having a double mastectomy just felt quite challenging to me, even though, you know, in a way, a lot of people who'd had breast cancer would be going like, oh my God, I don't want breast cancer again. I'm having the mastectomy. But I think I almost went the other way. I was a bit like, well, I've been cancer free for 7 years. It's not come back as secondaries, but nor has it come back as a new cancer, which is obviously what the gene would put me at the risk of. So I'll kind of be okay for a few more years and I'll just have MRI scans until I'm ready to make a decision. And I think I also saw, wrongly, I now realise, a mastectomy is quite a sort of brutal thing to do to your body. Even though, of course, it's a brilliant thing because it reduces your cancer risk. I was quite like, I don't want to have a mastectomy. So initially I really resisted, but then with time I did have one and I'm, you know, so glad I have had it.
Yeah, of course. And you say it's, you say like, oh, why wouldn't I immediately jump to that? I think even for women that have that first primary diagnosis, the thought of going through a mastectomy is a huge deal. It's, you know, it is a part of your body, and the cancer risk or no cancer risk, it is a daunting thing to have to change your body in such a drastic way. And we hear that a lot. I don't think you're alone in feeling that way at all.
Okay.
So did you have your husband there for support through that? And do you feel that maybe you may have made a different decision had you not been in a relationship at that time?
He was very much there. So it took me quite a few years to feel ready to have the surgery. And we were actually married by then. I don't think it was because we were married that I had it. I think I didn't need the security of a marriage as such, but I just needed that time to psychologically feel ready for it. And he was, you know, very relaxed about the whole thing. And I kind of feel a bit embarrassed saying this because it can sound a bit crude, but he's Northern and he kind of almost like made light of it, not in a horrible way, but in a kind of way that actually felt quite lovely. He was like, oh, what? So you mean I'm getting a new pair of boobs on the NHS for you? Which kind of, you know, you can cut that out if you want, but that's just crude and too crass. But it actually, I really appreciated it. He was weirdly quite excited by it. And I actually am genuinely very happy with the results of the surgery. I mean, my surgeons did do a fantastic job. And I think that, like, if I were to ever be single again, which I hope I will never be and be with him forever, but if, you know, something happened and we were to ever be apart and I had to start dating again, I really don't think I would have an issue about that now. I just feel very comfortable with the reconstruction, the silicone implants that I was given. And I don't think it would bother me because they really do look very good. And I sort of almost want to share that with other women who are in doubt. I mean, I know a mastectomy is not the right course for everyone. I know that, you know, reconstruction is not the right course for everyone, but I am very happy, genuinely very happy with how everything's turned out. And with hindsight, I only wish I'd done it earlier because I would have saved myself the anxiety of the MRI scans, that kind of terror every time I went of like, oh my God, is my luck going to have run out this time?
Mm. And I mean, your husband, as crass as his comments may have been, sometimes kind of approaching things with that sort of humour and yeah, just that kind of lightness around the topic probably takes the edge off, to know that you've got that support in someone.
Yes.
And so going through that the second time with that security of someone close to you who you knew was going to look after you and still care about you, you know, no matter what, must have been so different to how you felt like undergoing treatment. I know you didn't have a diagnosis for your mastectomy, but to how you were going through treatment when you had that primary diagnosis and having so many other sort of uncertainties around you in your life.
Definitely, yeah. And also, you know, I was quite a lot older. I was nearly 15 years older than when I was diagnosed. And I think, you know, by that age, you know, people have had stuff happen. Like, I think at 31, it's easy to sort of think that everyone's just cruising through life, even though of course they're not. Mm. But there's less illness at least around. But, you know, by the time you get to your mid 40s, you know, other people have like had cancer or serious health problems of some sort. So it is a different landscape anyway that you're kind of in.
Of course. And so given what we've spoken about, I wonder, is there anything that you might say to women who are worried that their diagnosis or any treatment that they've had might affect their chances of finding a partner?
I would say that I really think that it's so important. You, in a way, it's a really good way of kind of weeding out the good ones from the bad ones. Because if you want to be in a long-term relationship with somebody, you know, you're both at some point going to have some sort of challenge. It might not be cancer, but something kind of hard and difficult is going to happen, and you need those kind of people who are there for you, you know, whether you're sick, whether you're, you know, grieving, whether you're, you know, having some big challenge in your life, and not just the ones who are there for you, you know, because you look really nice and you're really good fun. So that is probably the biggest piece of kind of wisdom I learned from it. And also I think that, well, of course it's important to share, you know, if you have had cancer, to share that with somebody, if you're getting kind of emotionally very close to them in a relationship. Mm. I don't think you need to rush in and tell someone immediately. It might be a little harder because obviously something like breast cancer does leave visible scar on your body. But, you know, lots of people have stuff happen to them, and you wouldn't necessarily feel you need to tell someone immediately. You know, it's kind of part of an unfolding of a relationship, of an intimacy between you.
Mm. Yeah, you're completely right. It, the same as any other sort of very close personal details that these things do, yeah, sort of slowly reveal themselves over time and with trust. And it makes sense that breast cancer would just become another one of those life details that would,
yeah,
gradually emerge. Yeah. And are there any kind of long-term changes that you attribute kind of being diagnosed so young? Are there any life changes that you made at that time that have stuck with you, that slower change of pace perhaps?
I mean, I think I'm the kind of person who's quite into sort of mind-body stuff. And I mean, a huge thing that really blossomed in my life, probably partly because of the diagnosis, was about 6 months before I was diagnosed, I started doing yoga, just like a weekly class late at night after work. Mm. And I was really got into it. I loved it. And then when I took that time off during my chemo, during my treatment, I was able to, you know, start to go to yoga classes more often because I wasn't working. And so this huge love of yoga grew to the extent actually I trained and became a yoga teacher.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And so that whole side of things, yoga and meditation, have really, really stayed with me. And I think they're not for everybody. I think you've got to love it to make it worth doing. But for me, they've just been a really beautiful thing that have both been with me. And I think, you know, definitely helped me especially at times, you know, where you've got a scan and you're feeling anxious. I mean, nothing completely dissolves the scan anxiety, but at sort of helping me through those more difficult moments.
I think that's an excellent point. And yoga and mindfulness and things of that ilk, we tend to recommend to women who are having those kinds of anxieties. And actually, with that in mind, is there any advice that you received that helped you cope with your diagnosis, or advice that you would want to impart to other people that you think, you know, you learned during that process?
I mean, I learned a lot of things from the whole experience. I think one of the things that was really powerful for me is it's so important to have hope, because when someone tells you you've got cancer, your world just falls away. And I thought, oh my God, that's it. That's my life basically over. Maybe not today or tomorrow, but, you know, surely in a few years at the very most. Mm. And I remember I was in hospital and this lovely Australian nurse was looking after me and one morning. And she said to me, and this was literally like the day after I was told, she said, you know what, when my grandmother had breast cancer in Sydney when she was your age, and that was over 60 years ago. Mm. She only had surgery. There was no chemo back then. And guess what? She died of something completely unrelated last year, age 90. It still felt shivers through me saying it. It was such kind of powerful medicine to almost hear like, yeah, you know what? You can be okay. So I would say to people to really try and find the hopeful stories, because it's so easy, especially online, to get caught up in the bad stories, the people who've died, the people who've got secondaries. And there will always be, you know, both sides of the coin there. But I think to sort of empower yourself by surrounding yourself with the hopeful ones and believe that, you know, there's no reason you shouldn't be one of those too.
Mm, yeah, completely. I think you sort of mentioned this about your mastectomy and kind of knowing what you know now, wish you'd had it earlier. Is there anything else that you learnt later on that you wish you'd been aware of before you were diagnosed?
I think one of the things, it wasn't so much before I was diagnosed, but maybe while I was going through treatment, was I had this really naive view that the day treatment ended, that my life would almost like fairly quickly snap back to normal and I'd be feeling great again because, hey, treatment was over, cancer world was over. But actually, I found that period post-treatment, the first few months post-treatment, really, really hard, because mm. you know, you're so used to being almost held in this kind of protective embrace of the hospital and the appointments and the structure. And then suddenly it all falls away and suddenly you go back to the old world, but you're not the same. And friends have spent the last year, it was nearly a year, like getting on with their lives. And I found that period of adjustment really difficult. And I wish I'd known that it would be difficult, because I've subsequently spoken to a lot of people who said the same. And I think it's something we perhaps need to talk about a little bit more, just to normalise it, to know that that's almost part of the whole course.
Yeah, completely. But we do have services that we offer through Breast Cancer Now, because, like you say, once you're kind of out of that embrace of the actual medical side of things, you just sort of let loose to find your own way from there, and sometimes it's not very clear what should come next and how to adjust and catch up. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
I mean, one other thing that was really lovely for me that came from the whole experience was a love of writing. So in that time I took off, I started writing about my experience, initially just as a kind of journal for me, because it felt quite cathartic to write it all down. And then later I worked it into a full-length memoir. So, I mean, if that's something anyone would find helpful to read, it's called Hidden Young Single Cancer by me. And I just wanted to mention it in case that's helpful to actually read, you know, my story in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant that you've mentioned that, because I was going to say, is that available to buy?
Yes, that's easily available to buy on Amazon.
So if you'd like to read more about Annabelle's story, you can pick up a copy of her book, as she mentioned, or you can find her on Instagram at Annabelle Chown, and we'll link that in the show notes. So thank you very much for joining me today, Annabelle.
Thank you, Em, so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.